stand attention, usually with complaining at first. And if that doesn't work, then usually with some sort of violence, such as yelling, screaming, and perhaps even physical violence. Men claim to not understand women, and women can't seem to understand men. With these sorts of psychological programs in place, reinforced with real emotional pain, is there any wonder why you once cannot understand one another? The women want the man to be more romantic or more affectionate, yet not realizing that he may not have a clue as to how to be that way, or he may have so much pain and confusion associated with this sort of emotional expression that it is too difficult to confront. You once create these self-perpetuating hells and pass them from generation to generation. When do they stop? The image makers, the advertisers, have kept your heads full of images that will ensure that you will know and pursue what will make you cool. Rather, it is more like cold and heartless. You ones need to begin to realize that you are responsible for your emotions. Just because you had a less than ideal childhood does not mean that you cannot overcome the programming and be more balanced. It is okay for a man to hug another man. It is okay for anyone to cry when they are sad. It is quite okay for ones to give heartfelt praise to another and say that they are proud of them. Most often, especially in children, but in adults also, ones simply need the acknowledgement to let them know that somebody cares enough to even notice them. Else, ones will go around creating a way of making people notice them. This is the reason you ones have the problems with the street gangs. These are usually children who find the attention that they are starved for by going out and shooting someone or robbing someone. The parents don't know why their children do these things. The parents do not realize that the children...
This is take number two on the 4th of August, 1996. Thank you, Ed, for the pause.
The parents don't know why their children do these things. The parents do not realize that the children need nourishing love and acknowledgement. Most of these parents are wounded children themselves and cannot rise above their own deep-seated problems to break the vicious cycle that creates this internal emotional unbalance. Ones who come from a more balanced, halfway normal family most often do not realize that they have it so good. These ones have a hard time understanding why or how children can go out and shoot someone and not even care who they hurt. These who can go out and murder are the walking dead. They are so shut down that they are nearly incapable of understanding why it might be wrong to do some of the things they do. The only joy they know is the praise they receive from the like-minded, also mindless, ones to which they gravitate. Being a parent is such a great responsibility that few ever truly realize the actual magnitude of the responsibility. In the higher evolved societies, only the more balanced ones take on this responsibility. Thus, you have an upward spiraling culture of a more and more balanced nature, instead of the dwindling spiral of darkness that has overpopulated your planet with those of a soulless nature, devoid of life. You ones must be able to understand why and how it is that your society has come to the point at which you now find yourselves. When you interact with another, please realize that you are, if the person is at all alive, that is, has a soul, you are dealing with an emotional being who has needs and problems and is seeking to find purpose and meaning in their interactions. They may not always be easy to get along with, but if you can show them a nurturing acknowledgement of their being, then you very well may be surprised at that which comes back to you in return. The natural giving of Creator is that of a nurturing, mother-like nature. You will do wonders for your fellow man if you can learn to reflect this nurturing aspect of Creator's giving. I come now to impart this message to you, who will listen and understand, so that we might begin to change the erroneous thinking and mental programs. May you feel and understand the message given here. I am Lady Nada, present in the radiance of the One Light. May God bless the children who come during these times, for their challenges are great. And may God bless you ones who care deeply and try your best to give of much-needed emotional nourishment in these most starving times. For while the demands can be sometimes overwhelming, the rewards are indeed great. Salud. And now, hot off the press from August 3rd, from Saturday, is a message from Lanto, and I will again read the introduction. The following writing is by the Ascended Master known as Lanto the Sage, of the second ray or aspect of Creator Spectrum. This is among the seven great rainbow masters communicating at this time to help us get through Urshan's planetary transition and rebalancing. In journal number 7, called The Rainbow Masters, Lanto says, quote, I have chosen the softness of the yellow refraction as my most comfortable vibration and am most easily identified from my past, as you perceive it to be, experiences. My existence in mortal form brought me to your places that you now geographically identify as the Orient. I was given the great gifts of insight and wisdom from our Creator Source to experience upon this planet in the form of many most humble wise ones. My most revered service was to the one who came first as the Christos, the Buddha, who is brother and one with the Master Esu Jesus. And with that introduction, now the writing by Lanto. Greetings, my friend. I am most recognized by you ones as Lanto the Sage. I come in the light of the One Light. I represent the second ray or aspect of Creator Spectrum. The visible spectrum of light only represents a harmonic of the frequencies that make up all of creation. In the third dimensional compression, you ones are often limited in your perceptions. Not only are there non-visible third-dimensional aspects of Creator's light, there are also higher dimensional shifts associated with Creator's energy expressions. Do not get hung up on colors associated with a representative of an aspect of Creator. We all, you ones included, express on all frequencies or wavelengths. Ones are usually drawn to a certain aspect of Creator. Thus, there is more affinity associated with one area over another. This is because we are all created with a purpose in mind, and that purpose can be most easily filled through certain aspects of Creator. Note, please, that balance is of utmost importance for proper growth. All ones will gravitate towards Sananda's Christ energy. Many will gravitate towards Hilarion's heart energy, or Germain's transmuting energy. This is mostly due to the level of the expressing individuals. You ones are restless and need change. Thus, Germain will appeal to you, for he is master of that aspect of Creator's expression. You ask, where do you, Lanto, fit into this picture? I am guide and teacher. I am the gut feeling you ones get. The physical color associated with my energy is the golden yellow color, though the etheric color would be perceived differently. Ones who can see the colors of the auric field will most often perceive my energy as a blending of colors. I am a teacher. I have learned my lessons well and have earned my position among the other masters. We all have overlapping aspects and can express on any of the frequencies, though there is need to have specialists to answer the specific and directed needs of the ever-progressing souls. I have come now at this time of change so that you ones might receive balanced instructions and learn to follow your gut knowingness about what it is that you need to be doing. My scribe recognizes me as a communicator. Yes, indeed, I am probably the most heard but least recognized of the masters. For I will speak to ones at a level that bypasses the analytical mind and resonates within the emotional energy field of the being. This manifests as intuition or as the, quote, I don't know why, but I don't feel right about this situation, reaction. Even the most shut down emotionally person will, if he has a soul, feel my nudges. You ones must be open to the nudges. This is most often your guides working with you to help you to find the right path so that you are prepared for and ready to accept your purpose. This does not mean you have to go anywhere. This is to say that your life experiences are being guided for your highest good. The more open you are toward the following of these internal messages, the easier it will be for you ones to get the proper insights and lessons necessary for your upcoming roles. Sometimes these lessons are harsh and seemingly abrupt. For example, ones are losing their jobs all over the country. Be careful in your thinking, for such luck is most likely for good reason. You may be needed elsewhere, and this may be the only way to get you to look within and draw upon the creative energy that will guide you to a more productive experience. As some ones are lost, others are called to serve. So if your life seems to be turning upside down, please take a moment and call in the light and get still. Notice the gut level sensations. They can be translated into written or verbal communication with practice. This will be as if you have thought of the message yourself. You will most likely only hear your own inner voice. Listen to the message. Write it down or speak it into a recording device. Write or speak what comes, then discern the message. Remember to always call in the light before, during, and after this exercise. Otherwise, the dark side shall almost surely come to influence and trick you. We are fast approaching a time when you ones shall all be consciously receiving. The mere fact that you are drawn to this information source, contact, and are reading this message implies that you are and have been receiving at least at the gut level. Well, imagine that. It is not everyone's task to write public messages for the masses. It is, however, your God-given right to connect up to higher source and receive your own personal instructions. Your guides are there for you at this time to help coordinate your training and life experiences. Be patient with those around you. If they do not share your beliefs, do not condemn them, for each is responsible for their own self. You do not know the contract of another. So when one experiences as, let's say, a lawyer, that one just may be necessary to help you at a later date. Ones may deny their spiritual side, yet they may be the inventor or scientist who brings new technology to your world. Ones are allowed to ignore their spiritual side if they so choose. There is no force from we of the Light of Brotherhood. If you come across others who don't seem to hear or want to listen to spiritual truth, do not condemn them. Look to their actions. Most often, these ones are the more advanced ones who recognize that religions are very confusing and thus choose to avoid any spiritual discussion whatsoever. Their actions will hold clues to their being. Are they generally kind and caring? Do they know innately what is right and what is wrong? Despite the robotic overpopulation of your planet, it is still full of godly people who only want to do what is right. These ones know right from wrong because they innately feel the difference. This is because they are connected to the God source, even if they do not acknowledge the connection. This message is coming now so that you ones begin to realize that you are receiving guidance. Moreover, note well that there is fast approaching a time when, due to external physical events, the means for getting the contact newspaper delivered will be nearly impossible. This probable scenario shall serve as a wake-up call to you ones who are still trying to figure out if you really believe these messages of light and truth. Doubt is one of the most effective tools utilized by the dark side. If they can't dissuade you completely, they will try to cast doubt. Thus, the inaction due to procrastination will set you back or cause you to miss opportunities set up for your growth. When you find yourself doubting things such as personal worth or personal beliefs, I would suggest that the doubt is most often adversarially induced. Ones do not like being treated as an outcast or as the one who goes against their parents' fundamental teachings. When you doubt spiritual matters, realize, please, that there is a real battle going on within. This battle is for the control of your soul, or at least for the influence over your soul. Go within and call upon Creator God, the one who created you. Get quiet and search your heart to find that which you know to be true. Ask any question of the heart, such as, how can I know what is real or true? With such a question asked with heartfelt curiosity, the answers must come. Next, you must monitor your thoughts closely, as your mind will be caused to give you the answer. Clues and experiences that hold the answer will be caused to be remembered so that you can realize what is true and what does have verification and validity. Rarely will you hear a voice of another, not at first anyway, though it is possible. And remember to always call in the light for protection first. Be honest with yourself, and you shall know what is true and what is half-truth or lie. I am Lanto the Sage, the Elder, keeper of the second aspect of Creator Spectrum. May your journey in light be a reflection of the inner God force who created you and is you. Thank you, and blessings to all who read this message. Salute.
Thank you so much. These are the bits of fuel for my own soul. So I thank all of you for abiding with us long enough for us to get a little bit of connection. Always there seems to be trivia that hits us, because everything except our journey within God is trivia. It's a play. It's an ongoing scenario in which after a while you can't tell the dream from the vision, from the reality, from the hoax. And all along the way, if you be still and listen from time to time, those warm moments of contact, nobody you see on this side who really wants to control your spiritual growth, want to acknowledge those wee small voices, those warm, only this energy could have had that effect on you. You come to know the energy. On the 30th, for instance, it was rather an incredible morning. Many things happened, some joyous, some down. And suddenly, out of the push and the shove of rushing from this thing to rush to this one, there is a little song in the heart that's going on, that somehow things are working the way they're supposed to. And very gently to Dorma came her son. From my side, who just softly kisses the cheek, lights a little burst of light, and says, "It's okay, Mom. Don't forget. Today's my birthday." out of absolutely the blue. And I can get sensitive about it also, because the attachments are made, the connections that never go, never go. These are the life silver cords that make us one. And no matter how long ago in your experience will someone have departed, sometimes those memories are not pleasant. But always the love will remain. It will be the love that will reach out across the generations of time. And then there aren't any birthdays anymore. There aren't any goodbyes anymore. And in Jonathan Livingston Seagull, were some good messages. Fly across forever, and we'll meet now and then. Because everyone who is friend will meet from time to time in those spaces in between. It is as sure as your soul. And you will find by the time you come into that recognition, everything's all right. All the forgiveness, all of the things, all that you think you could not forgive, it's all right. Because by the time you can make these connections, you have grown. And those other spirit friends have grown. And it is as if there were no birthdays. No goodbyes. After all, you have to say so long or goodbye, or you won't be able to meet again after those generations. Meetings are sweet and joyous and renewed after these periods of time, after there's been a necessity for farewell. So let us hold to these thoughts. These are the things that keep us headed in the right direction, so that we can live in the joy of the realization that it's going to be fine if we don't lose our way. Many will lose their way. And that's not your problem. You must keep centered, balanced, and focused. And all of the distractions will try to pull it away from you. And I think I would like to leave before the break without reading more, so that I can enjoy a little bit the spiritual aspect of our friends. They're our brethren. They are our connections. And they are as real as any of you sitting in the room.
I see Mr. Dixon outside.
Well, do you think he would want to say something? I know that there's one other thing I want to go on the record here with that red car sitting out there. I don't want to hear it back from our friends like we have. Oh, the Eckers have all these cars and all these toys and a couple of airplanes and all these RVs and things. There's a red car sitting out there that in no way belonged to the Eckers. On the other hand, they had a choice of walking in 6 days or walking in 6 months. And they chose to wait 6 months. You cannot buy a used car. You cannot get anything of value on a car unless you trade it in. And they might thank me. I did not come up with this clever one. But those older Aerostars, see, they got it used. And it did not belong to them then, but it was purchased through their neighbor Centoni over in Mojave. Now remember when the Eckers home was broken into and the young man went over then and stole a car from Keith Brothers Rental and came down Eckers Street, and Gene by now had jumped into the back seat and Melvin ran it right off into the wash. And took off, and most of you will remember that. Well, Ecker is the one who saved that vehicle. So they were pretty nice about working the deal because the transmission went in the other one to the tune of $8,000 to $10,000 cash. And Ecker said, well, I guess we're going to walk. There is not cash to be had for that. And Mr. Keefe said, they would take the old one. You drive the car for 6 months free. Now, I think that's a good deal. So when this gets spread around, I hope that all of you will remember it's that way. And not the Eckers went out and bought another wonderful new car. And so where are we, EJ? Do we have cake, pie,
Commander?
Announcements?
Commander?
Yes.
I'd like to ask, could you name the color and the name of the Seven Rainbow Masters?
Get the book.
Yeah, yeah.
It's a journal.
Sounds like the commander just sold another book. Yes, I do have a quick announcement. I just spoke with Gene, and he tells me that the likelihood of something interesting happening tomorrow is somewhere between slim and none. Those people who have active subpoenas, however, should go on schedule so that they're not held in contempt of court. And I believe the newspaper person probably needs to be there also, just to record what happens.
Why don't we take a break, and then we'll look at apocalypse bugs, and that always is better on pie. Thank you.
An apocalypse bug? Hello, I'm Judy Woodruff, and welcome to CNN Presents. No unstoppable microbe has threatened the entire human race so far, but it could happen. In 1918, a mutant airborne flu virus broke out at a military training camp in Kansas and swept across the globe. In 16 months, it killed more than 20 million people, nearly 1% of the world's population. Today, scientists are not only concerned about new diseases, they're also alarmed about old enemies, common infections like strep and staph that are resisting antibiotics that have kept them in check for decades. Here is senior correspondent Larry Lamont.
Would you tie me into that, please?
Celeste Taylor isn't sick.
Let's go.
But she's carrying a deadly bacteria that could sweep through Tampa General Hospital, even kill her twin girls.
Just mommy underneath this big mask. Hopefully soon I can be able to touch you without these gloves on.
It was worse right after the twins were born. For several days, Celeste wasn't even allowed to see them.
Hey, sweetheart.
It was hard. I was very upset. I cried for days. And they brought me pictures then, so I would be able to see the baby's pictures.
I was late.
2 weeks after the births, doctors still won't permit skin-to-skin contact. Her babies have yet to see their mother's face.
Everybody looks at you funny and you feel like you have a disease.
Okay, I'm just going to do a little culture. Back of your nose, tell me if I hurt.
What Celeste has is one of the most feared bacteria found in hospitals, Staphylococcus aureus. It preys on the sick and vulnerable, causing deadly blood infections, pneumonia, toxic shock.
You're healthy.
Fortunately, Celeste doesn't have the bacteria in her bloodstream. She's only a carrier. But staph kills an estimated 60,000 Americans each year, more than die in car accidents. And killing the bacteria has become almost impossible. Staph has evolved, mutated, and become immune to antibiotics. Today, only one antibiotic is effective against the kind of staph Celeste has, vancomycin. But how long will it hold up? Many scientists are convinced there will soon be a medical disaster. tens of thousands of additional deaths from a super staph, an apocalypse bug no drug can defeat.
The question now more asked is, why haven't we seen it yet? It's not, will we see it? So we're just very, very close to a situation where antibiotics are becoming obsolete.
It's still shocking to think that there are bacteria out there that we cannot treat. That's not the way it was supposed to happen.
Why is this happening? In simple terms, misuse of antibiotics. One example, patients who don't finish an antibiotic prescription kill off the weakest bacteria, allowing the strongest to survive.
If the bacteria is not killed and it becomes resistant, it can leave the individual and go to somebody else. I think we see bacteria that are literally laughing at all the antibiotics. They are not being touched by them.
In this rural setting outside of Pottstown, Pennsylvania, a woman has made medical history. Her case proves how resourceful bacteria have become.
So I figured, operate Friday, she'll be out of here Monday or Tuesday. And
Carol Rothermaugh, a nurse, thought the operation on her sister Joan Ray would be routine.
July 9th, you were admitted with pancreatitis.
But Joan ended up in the hospital 322 days, primarily because of infections she developed after surgery.
I had so many tubes in me, I wonder what's taking care of what, you know?
Doctors fought the bacteria with heavy doses of antibiotics, including vancomycin. But over time, the germs developed resistance and took their toll.
I mean, I couldn't use my hands. I couldn't use my feet. I mean, I couldn't even pick up a book to read it. You know, I couldn't do nothing except watch TV. At one point, I couldn't remember how old my son was. I didn't even know what grade he was in. And I just get frustrated. I think, why can't I remember that stuff?
Dr. Henry Framow, an infectious disease specialist, was trying to figure out why, after 6 months of antibiotics, Joan was still sick. Lab work showed, besides staph infection, Joan had another bacteria in her system, VRE, or vancomycin-resistant enterococcus. As the name implies, it's already become immune to vancomycin and every other antibiotic. But in Joan's case, the organism made one more unexpected evolutionary leap.
We were flabbergasted by what we saw.
What they saw is on this culture plate, smeared with Joan's bacteria. A disc of vancomycin is in the middle.
And you can see the only place on this plate that the bacteria are growing are around that disc containing the vancomycin. They need that vancomycin in order to multiply. And if they don't have that, they won't grow. So in a sense, they're using the vancomycin as food.
The bacteria not only resist the drug, but have evolved to the point where they thrive on it. In response, doctors stopped giving Joan vancomycin, and the bacteria died. This was the first time ever scientists had seen the new bug, but it won't be the last.
Bacteria are really phenomenal, and they have an amazing ability to adapt to whatever stresses we inflict upon them. Not only do they develop resistance to antibiotics, they can even find ways to use that antibiotic to help them grow.
That adaptability worries scientists. Many believe a death-dealing, all-resistant apocalypse bug is inevitable.
But I can't see that this problem is going to get better. All that's going to happen is it's going to get worse.
The Centers for Disease Control think so, too. They have a special team on standby to race to any emergency. How serious is the war with these organisms? As serious as survival.
Microbes have been around for 3 billion years, and we've been around for a lot less time than that. They've shown their ability to survive and adapt to change. And the question is whether we can.
Coming up on CNN Presents, on the mosquito bite that can kill you, how can an everyday pest start an epidemic?
From the Western Hemisphere is coming back with the potential to affect the United States. It is called dengue. A severe form of the virus causes internal bleeding and is often fatal. What's more frightening, it's spread by a mere mosquito bite. Larry Lamont went to Puerto Rico during 1994's dengue epidemic and filed this report.
Puerto Rico awakens. Another day of life. Owen Rivera sleeps. He is near death.
He started with the blood pressure going down. He started showing bleeding in his stomach. Also, his urine turned red. And he showed all the signs that he was getting in shock.
His parents watch in disbelief. 2 days ago, their healthy son played Power Rangers with his brother. Today, he's on life support.
We couldn't get his blood pressure. If we don't get that blood pressure up, he might die.
The Riveras are told a tiny insect may be responsible. The female Aedes aegypti mosquito can carry a virus known as dengue, an infection of the blood. It's plagued the tropics since the late 1700s. Owen appears to have the most serious dengue, hemorrhagic fever. Fluid leaks out of the blood, the blood thickens, and the blood pressure plummets.
This is my life. This is the first time I've seen a dengue case like this. Really bad, in really bad condition.
Scientists are alarmed. Over the past 15 years in the tropics, outbreaks of dengue fever have become more severe, more widespread, more frequent.
Prior to 1981, only one country had reported a diagnosed case of dengue hemorrhagic fever. Today, we now are able to indicate that there are 14 or 15 countries in the Americas that have laboratory diagnosed cases of dengue hemorrhagic fever.
The rise of dengue is tied to the urbanization of the tropics. Man has invaded enemy territory, giving the mosquito unlimited targets, a perfect setting for epidemics. And man has brought his bad habits with him, helping the mosquito multiply.
With urbanization, you have deteriorating housing, you have inadequate water and sewage systems, lack of solid waste management, garbage piling up.
And some of that garbage includes plastic containers and tires filled with fresh rainwater, ideal incubators for the Aedes aegypti.
Okay, we have another one.
Puerto Rico was gripped by a dengue epidemic in late 1994.
Around 30 cases today.
Thousands endured splitting headaches and nausea. Fortunately, most of the cases were mild. Other tropical regions haven't been so lucky.
Our concern for the American region specifically is that the severe hemorrhagic form of disease will become epidemic like it has in Southeast Asia. That's what we're trying to prevent.
The efforts to prevent Owen from dying appear to be paying off. On his second day in the hospital, his vital signs have improved. Maybe he'll make it to his fifth birthday party just a week away.
Numbers looked better than 2 hours ago. He'll get better. Now we're going to do some minor changes and see what happens in the next 4 hours.
Translation, in the next 4 hours, Owen will either live or die. As he struggles, the government also fights back. Spraying makes people feel better, but it's ineffective because the Aedes aegypti hide under things and often live indoors. An intense educational campaign is underway, its impact limited. It's door-to-door, in-your-face visits from inspectors that leave the strongest impression, showing residents how they aid and abet the mosquito with open containers.
That's how easy it is. There's one open container and you have larvae and mosquitoes.
But these visits also reveal how slowly residents change old habits. As mosquito larvae grow on this man's porch, he says he knows little about the problem. He remembers seeing something about it on TV, but was left confused. This teenager is covered with bites.
Does that worry you at all? Why not?
I don't care about that.
attitude has a price tag. Owen Rivera.
We did a checkup of the patient's vital signs. Blood pressure normal, normal heart rate. He was breathing fine. His oxygenation was okay. So suddenly he was there, and he went into cardiac arrest, and he never came out. Just like that.
Doctors learned later Owen's condition was complicated by a strep infection. Another reason he died only a couple of hours after showing improvement. Owen Rivera is now here.
I remember the father saying there are a lot of criminals going around, drug dealers, killers, that they do fine. They're still alive around. Why my kid? Why my kid?
No answer is good enough. But as Dengue tightens its grip on the tropics, there will be more Owens.
Since we first aired this story last year, the dengue epidemic in Puerto Rico has ended. But last summer, a major outbreak in Mexico spilled into southern Texas, causing the first U.S. dengue cases in a decade. And experts at the Centers for Disease Control are keeping a lookout for the next outbreak.